This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Brian Fernandez and Tan Chung Han. And we continue a discussion of the stories that are shaping the business day today. But before that, just a quick reminder that after the 8 o'clock bulletin, we're going to have on the breakfast grill, Yang Berhormat Nick Nazmi Nick Ahmad. He's the state assemblyman for Seri Setia and also a member of the state executive council. His portfolio is education, human capital, development, science, technology, and innovation. He's also a PKR youth chief. And joining him is Cheryl Hamdan. He's the executive committee member of UMNO Youth, and also he leads the Young Professional Bureau of UMNO Youth. He's also CEO of Destiny Oil Services. So the both of them are going to be on this morning. We're going to be talking about youth in politics, or young people and politics. Never the two should meet. They do meet, but where do they meet and whatnot? Tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us on 018-789-8899. Tell us what you think, especially if you're under 35.
Yeah. Not that keeps us out of it.
Yeah, I mean,
you speak for yourselves.
You should be doing this interview, Han, because of course you are in their age category. Both the gentlemen who I mentioned earlier are in their 30s.
Oh, no, I'll leave them to your trusted hands there, my friend. But I think this grill also follows a recent study about how Malaysian youth, broadly speaking, are somewhat on the fence when it comes
largely,
to their...
majority of young people are on the fence when it comes to the political party they identify with most and feel that most represents their interests. So, so the stats are there about how young people feel, and it seems to be that they're undecided.
Right.
Because that's very important.
And which is interesting because, you know, given the kind of traction that, you know, political discourse, and I'm using that term loosely here, political discourse has on social media, you would think there'll be a lot more youth who are actively engaged with politics. And we have seen, you know, be the Birthday movement or, you know, cyber troopers all out there, you know, and whatnot. You would think that would lead
You know, don't confuse brains with the bull market. don't confuse social media with the world out there.
But I think today the youth are more concerned about bread and butter issues. And that's really swaying the thoughts in terms of where to vote. The reality is they're going to place their vote where they think their personal lives are going to improve. Whereas in a lot of other economies, so more developed economies, even when you're in university, you already start affiliations in terms of your respective political parties, whether in Australia, US, and so forth. So it's just very, very different, I think, the way it starts.
But what happened to the idea that the youth are the idealized generation, right? They vote based on their ideals and forget about, you know, your bread and butter issues, right? Because they have the luxury of doing so. Well, at least so goes the conventional
wisdom. Yeah, and also there is this really interesting fact, and we've seen it just recently in New Zealand, the leadership of the Labour Party there going to a woman under 40, right? I think she's 38 or 39 years old. She's leading the Labour Party into the next general elections. We've seen Emmanuel Macron, who at 39 is the president of the Republic of France.
And in Ireland,
we have Leo Varadkar and also Justin Trudeau. I don't know how old Justin Trudeau is, but he seems young. I mean, he seems young. So we see also not just we're not just talking about voters, we're also talking about youth in leadership positions. And I think that is going to be an exciting discussion. So remember, you can always tweet us or WhatsApp us and we'll include you in the conversation. Justin Trudeau, I've just been told, is 45. So closer to your age, Brian.
Yeah.
Now we go to Singapore. That gives us the first story. To cut costs and avoid layoffs and to address what they call a temporary crew surplus situation, Singapore Airlines has offered its 8,200 cabin crew staff a 3-month voluntary no-pay leave scheme. So this is no pay for 3 months. The scheme will start in September.
Well, I think this is a question of Singapore Airlines CEO Goh Choon Phong basically putting a positive spin on the fact that they need to cut costs. Now, their financial situation has deteriorated in the past 1 year. So after they swung to 138 million Singapore dollars, or roughly about 400 plus million ringgit net loss in its fourth quarter, compared to 225 million Sing dollars, or 709 million ringgit net profit for the same period the previous year. They are facing intense competition from Asian low-cost carriers like AirAsia, Middle East Airlines and so forth, and they are at the premium end of the market. But at the same time, what many people don't realize with Singapore Airlines is the fact that they actually have four brands under the umbrella. So when you think of Singapore Airlines, you always think of just the main, the mother brand. Singapore Airlines actually has also Silk Air, which is supposed to be originally their premium regional carrier. They then set up Tiger Airways in response to AirAsia a few years ago. Then they set up Scoot in response to AirAsia X, which is a long-haul, low-cost carrier.
Okay, coming back to the labour situation, though, it says a temporary crew surplus situation, they're giving 3 months. Now, what happens at the end of the 3 months? We know it's starting in September. So it's September, October, November. Come December, are they promising that everybody gets back onto the wage carousel?
So what happened? It doesn't specify in the Bloomberg article. But what it does, however, let's look at the past. In the past, that's been the case. This is not the first time Singapore Airlines has done it. Mm-hmm. Whenever there were headwinds in the past, they have done this. And really, it's a good way to avoid making layoffs. Mm-hmm. So you then optimize your and spread out the work among some of your existing crew. You let people go on sabbatical and leaves and you cut costs. So it's a win-win situation for everybody.
Now, I don't know if it's a win-win situation if you get no pay for three and if you haven't got the savings. And this is what we've been talking about as well. People prepared for a situation like this. When your boss says to you, okay, I'm not going to take you off the books. I'm not going to sack you, you're not going to get a salary for the next 3 months. Can you survive?
And this is going to be a question posed to the 8,200 cabin crew who are expected to be affected by this voluntary scheme here. But, according to this article, this is not the first time that Singapore Airlines has undertaken such a measure. Now, to put that net loss into perspective, though, that was actually 2 quarters ago. If you, to be fair to Singapore Airlines, they have seen a rebound in the 3 months ending June 30th. They came back to a net profit, 235 million Singapore dollars. But to look at the financial year as a whole, and just to give you an idea is how far Singapore Airlines has fallen, right, in terms of their profitability. 10 years ago, these guys in a financial year would be earning over 2 billion Singapore dollars per financial year, and their financial year ends March 31st. Their last financial year, which ended this past March 31st, they were down to just over 400 million. So a significant decline in their fortunes there. So no surprise here when they had to take these and what's called these temporary crew surplus situations and all these voluntary non-pay leave schemes.
But on the other hand of the equation, they're not the only one in the airline business facing headwinds. Cathay Pacific is currently undergoing a three-year restructuring scheme, which they announced earlier this year. They're trying to get up to 4 million Hong Kong dollars in savings over that period of time, 2 billion this year. And how they're doing that is really the classic cutting jobs, management jobs, pay freezes for managers, halt on recruitment, 30% of headcount.
So it seems kind of kind to do this, right? You keep them on the payroll, don't pay them, but you keep them on the payroll. But what it also signals is their unwillingness to say, go the retrenchment route. Now, what would retrenchment bring for those workers? Yes, it would end their jobs, but they would have to be given some sort of payout. This is not a voluntary separation scheme where you get paid to leave the organization.
Non-pay leave.
There's a non-pay leave. And so, I mean, there's this slightly dark side to this, which is that you're left in limbo when it comes to wages, but then you have no remedy.
Well, not quite, because it's only 3 months. And given previous, given the precedences set before, that they would likely
only
come
3 months, that's a quarter of the year.
At least they know. So
guys, one of the key things which is different is also in terms of the labour laws. Now, in the labour laws in Malaysia and the labour laws in Singapore are a lot different. So if, for example, a cabin crew in Malaysia has worked for, say, airline XYZ for 20 years, you have, according to our labour laws, you've got to pay them a minimum of 1 month's salary for every year of service. That's not the case in Singapore. Basically, it's your notice period and off you go.
Wow. So, but perhaps not so friendly down there in that island city state. But I mean, real quick, just to bring it, zoom out to the broader perspective here. It's not just Singapore Airlines. It's not just Cathay Pacific. We have seen that right here at home, Malaysia Airlines. We have seen that with Qantas over there in Australia. And these full service airlines are having to try and turn things around, unlike the budget low cost airlines, right?
Yeah.
Ryan?
So basically, AirAsia, on the other hand, for Q2 reported an 88% load factor, which is really significant. Although their profit fell from to 615 million from 877 million, their revenue actually rose 31%. So, the budget airlines are doing really, really well.
Okay, moving on. Uber in Singapore also catching fire, not in a good way. A car rented from Uber caught fire. This is a Honda, I believe. The Singapore episode adds to a growing list of crises that are unfolding in Uber globally, including a lawsuit against a Singaporean auto importer.
Yeah, so basically what Uber's business model is slightly different from, so it's a model in the US, for example. In Singapore, they set up a separate company and they bought over 1,000 Honda Vizels, which is basically a HRV equivalent, from a parallel importer. And the crux of the story is there was apparently an awareness that the vehicles were defective and they didn't, because a recall was issued the previous year. And they did not address it. So and one of the vehicles actually caught fire.
Yeah. So essentially, Uber knowingly sent out faulty vehicles onto the streets of Singapore. So again, it comes back to this question, and this is a dilemma that we have addressed here in Malaysia as well, right? So will these companies have your best interests at heart, or does the private sector fundamentally just pursue those profits for their shareholders, and that's it? That's where they draw the line. So this is rather a timely discussion, given that Malaysia's parliament has just passed the bill on
e-hailing,
e-hailing ride-sharing services.
So they've amended the Public Transport Bill, which is now Public Transport Bill 2017 and Commercial Licensing Bill also 2017, protecting us as consumers. Vehicles must be less than 5 years old. They've basically, drivers have to be vetted and the vehicles have to be periodically inspected.
We'll be coming back with more business news later in the morning. We're coming up to the news shortly, and after that, of course, the Breakfast Grill. Our guest this morning, Yang Berhormat, Nick Nazmi, Nick Ahmad. He's the PKR Youth Chief, and of course, Shahril Hamdan, also with UMNO Youth. And so stay tuned for that. It's going to be a hot topic and discussion. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.